Okay, we know what that means. 7:07 on WCCO. I'm Laura Oakes. Thanks for getting up with us on this 4th of July morning, America's 250th birthday this year. That is a big deal. It is time for our car care show with Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning, Laura.
How are you today? What are your plans this weekend?
Well, I'm up north with my two sons. We're going to enjoy the 4th of July weekend and relax, hopefully. We did get some weather this past week, so we have some trees to clear and clean up. But hopefully it'll be a relaxing weekend.
Where is your place up north?
We're actually on the Mississippi, smack between McGregor and Jacobson off of Highway 65. So about 2 hours and 20 minutes from home.
Oh, that's the perfect distance for getting away, I think. Like it's not too short of a drive, but it's not too long of a drive where it takes you all day to get there.
I agree. I think that 2 hours and change is just about enough time.
Right. Good. So if anybody has a question for Nick, a car care related question, give us a text, give us a call. The number is the same, 651-461-9226. And we already have a text here, Nick. I have a 2007 Toyota Camry SE. The lens covers for my headlights are getting cloudy. Do the over-the-counter products work? And if so, how long do they last before you have to reapply? We also had a Toyota Camry that had these cloudy headlights, and it used to really bug me. I guess I didn't even know that there were products that clean them up like that. What do you think?
Well, there are a lot of products. Personally, you know, some of them can help. How long, it really depends, I suppose. We do a process of cleaning them where essentially we're taking a fine grit and we're sanding that oxidation off. It takes like 45 minutes per headlamp, so it's a pretty time-consuming process. You have to have really attention to detail to make sure you get all that off. Don't burn through the plastic. You know, it's a process, and then we put some polish on afterwards. And I'd like to say my opinion would be, it seems like we don't see much of that fading or oxidation until 10, 12 years of age. I think when we clean them, they're good again for a few years, but we don't have the ability to put that sealant or that coating that they put on those headlamps when they're new. So it can be done. It does make them much better so you can see again, especially at night and with poor weather. But it's not going to give you the same length that they originally did. So it helps get you a few more years. The other option, too, is sometimes, depending on the make and the model of the vehicle, you can find replacement headlamp assemblies. Do investigate that, because there are some aftermarket ones that do fit and work just fine, which might save you some money that way also.
Okay, great. If you have a question for Nick Stoffel, car-related question, text us. Give us a call, 651-461-9226. Nick, I wanted to ask you a little bit about just what the recent heat we've had and the heat that's coming again next week, what it does to things like tire pressure and our batteries, and if there are anything that we can do to prevent problems along those lines with tires or with batteries going dead or cars overheating, or, you know, what heat-related tips do you have?
Well, what I would say is it's more of the extremes, whether it's the hot heat of the summer or the deep cold of the winter. Typically, we see a lot of wear and tear on the battery throughout the heat, but we don't notice that until we need that extra capacity, which is in the winter months. So the heat, vibration's hard on a battery, but you don't realize it until it's January and something below zero and the car doesn't start. Outside of just doing good maintenance, taking care of the vehicle, there's not much you can do. Cars are designed to be driven when it's hot here. Keep in mind there's other parts of the country which are much warmer for a longer period of times, and the cars survive there also. So the difference that we have is the extreme of like the heat of the summer and the cold of the winter. So I think we start to see more of the results of those extreme temperatures and their effects on the vehicles. But you maintain your vehicle, keep in good working order is the best that we can do.
Okay, great. Another texter. After a week of not using my car, I started it to find out that I had a warning basically stating that there was no gas in the car. The gauge was on empty, but I know that I had gas in the car and the check engine light is on. Is it okay to drive my car until I can get it fixed next week?
Well, I would drive it to the gas station. First of all, make sure there is fuel in the, yeah, in the car. If the gas light is on, the gauge says it's low, short of there being something wrong with that sending unit, which is possible, which could also turn on the check engine light. But it being low on fuel alone won't turn the check engine light on. So I would go to a filling station, fill it up, make it, or get a receipt so we know how much fuel went into there. So next week, if you do still need to bring it in, you can say, hey, it said it was on E, but it only took 3 gallons or 5 gallons. But if it took 15 gallons, depending on the tank capacity, it might have just been very low on fuel. So go fill it up, get a receipt so you know how much fuel went into the tank. Save that receipt in the event that you do have to bring it in. You can share that with the folks at the shop.
Okay. I hate that check engine light. It just causes anxiety. You never know what is wrong, and you feel like you never know if you need to actually bring it in and get it checked out, or if it's just something minor like your tire pressure is low on a cold winter day. But I guess we need it, don't we? I mean, that's just a me thing.
No, we do need it, and technically it's an emissions light, so this is kind of hard to sometimes wrap your head around here. But that light will not come on for the tire pressure, for example. It will not come on if it's a burnt out headlight. It has to be something emissions related, which could be a misfire.
Okay.
It could be the gas cap, because the gas cap emitting fuel vapors is an emission. So you have to kind of think out of the box a little bit here. If the transmission is slipping, the car's not moving like it should, it's burning excessive fuel, that's an excessive emission, the light is on. So that light can be as simple as a gas cap, as we referred to, or it could be some sort of misfire that could be damaging. So there's a huge range of possibilities, and one light to cover all those examples. So what I tell people is, if the light comes on, it's running perfectly normal, just make an appointment in the near future, get it checked out, figure out what you want to do once you have that information. If the light is on, it's running rough, you need to make that a priority. And if the light is ever flashing, that's telling us something significantly is wrong. You need to stop the vehicle and likely have it towed into the shop. So there's three kind of guidelines to follow.
That would do me in if the check engine light was actually flashing. That would not be good. All right.
No, that would not be good. You need to have that car towed.
Got it. Okay, so if you have a question for Nick, give us a call. Give us a text, 651-461-9226. It's 7:15 on CCO. We're going to take a quick break. Come back with your questions on CCO. Good morning, 7:18 on WCCO. I'm Laura Oakes. We are taking your calls and texts for Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul. We have Nick for about 25 more minutes. So let's get him some more questions. The number is 651-461-9226. And Nick, we have Jerry on the line from Minnetonka. Jerry, what's your question?
Good morning, Mexi. I got a street rod, and I recently had a motor professionally built. It's like 750 horse on the dyno. It's roller cam, and all the goodies. But it's carbureted, 2.4 barrel. It's just got break-in oil in it. What would you recommend? I'm not a big fan of synthetic. What would you recommend in a motor like that?
Well, I would talk with the builder, first of all. He's likely going to recommend some sort of synthetic oil. There's a lot of brands out there, AMSOIL, Mobil 1, Castrol. There's a lot of varieties there. But I would probably talk to that builder, especially if he has a preference on weight. Depending on the tolerances and such, it might be a 530, it might be something heavier or lighter. So I would refer back to the builder. I suspect it's going to be some sort of synthetic oil. Something like that, you probably won't put a lot of miles on it, obviously. But I think it's still a good practice to probably change that oil and filter annually with the heating, cooling, all the condensation. We want to keep inside that motor as clean as we can. So probably a synthetic oil, change it annually would be my advice.
All right. Thank you very much for the call, Jerry. And Nick, you just mentioned the importance of checking or possibly replacing the filter there. Talk to me a little bit about how we know when a filter, if it's an air filter, an oil filter, how do we know when those need to be replaced?
Well, most of them will be in the service interval. Obviously, when we do an oil change, replacing the oil filter, because you cannot see. If it's been that 5,000 miles as we recommended, that filter's full of debris, so it's time to be done. An air filter, depending on the vehicle, might be easily accessible, so you can visually look at it, put it back in if it's not needed replacement. But like a cabin filter, for example, I would probably follow the interval there too. Sometimes you have to take the dash, the glove box out, and do some disassembly. So anytime there's time consuming to inspect or visually inspect, you want to follow that interval because you don't want to take these things in and multiple times without replacing them. So, but if it's a simple look, like an air filter, you can pull the cover off, take a look at it, and replace it as necessary. So if all between following the interval and the visual inspection is probably the best guideline.
Gotcha. Let's go to Don in Andover. Good morning, Don. What's your question?
Question is, on a car engine light comes on and you take it in, they always have to do a diagnostic on it to find out the problem. Well, it cost me a little over $200 to have that done to find out was my radiator or not gas cap. Why is that so expensive? It only took about a half hour to find it, problem.
Well, so when you access the car's computer system, you retrieve a fault code. This example is probably P0456 or somewhere in the 450s. And what it tells you is it's either a small evaporative leak or a gross evaporative leak. There is cycles that you can test. You want to test the purge valve, the vent valve. These are all components, a part of that system, as is the gas cap. So you perform a test to see if it can hold from any kind of leak. If it fails the leak, sometimes at that point in time, you need to use a smoke machine to introduce a little bit of pressurized smoke to the system to find the cause of the leak. So I understand it was just the gas cap. And you could just, people say, I just want to replace this part. Well, if somebody would have came in and said, hey, we're going to put this part on, this gas cap, $20 or $30 or whatever, and the light comes back on, you're going to be frustrated. So the cost is proving it out, doing the test. I understand the result was a simple fix. If it would have been a purge valve or a canister, which is hundreds and hundreds of dollars, it would have been a different result. So we need to be careful when we test that we just don't assume it's something simple, because it may very well be, but without doing the test complete, you don't have the complete answer. So it's a long answer, but sometimes when the result was an easy gas cap, I understand the frustration. But if it's something much more involved, then you're like, okay, now I can see what happened here.
Thanks for the call, Don. Let's go to Ralph on the line. Ralph, what's your question for Nick?
Yeah, good morning. Enjoy your show. Say I have a 2026 GMC Yukon, and I keep reading that there's a problem when you're driving on the freeway with a system that they run four cylinders and that the engine go to heck after a while. You know anything about that? I'll hang up and wait for your answer. Thank you.
Well, what it is, it's kind of a fuel management where it does shut down four of the cylinders to try to, when you don't need that extra power because you're at a sustained speed. There are different vintages where they had some issues with that. Obviously, you look online, you can read a lot about it. My advice would be to talk with the dealership, ask them on this particular vehicle, this particular engine setup, is that a common problem? As the cars get newer, as they see problems in the past, they do make improvements to prevent from those problems continuing to happen. So I can't say on a brand new vehicle if that's going to be a problem. I can tell you, though, in the early 2020s, they were having some issues. In the 19s, 18s, they had some problems with some of those setups and those systems. But I can't speak for the newer vehicles. My assumption would be that they've made some improvements in it so they don't continue to have those same problems.
Thank you, Ralph. We're taking your calls and texts for Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul, 651-461-9226. Let's go to Vince in Coon Rapids. Good morning, Vince.
Good morning. I was on before and somebody poo-pooed my recommendation, but for the woman with the cloudy headlights, if you take off, spray it on and wipe it off almost immediately, it clears them up in seconds instead of when I used the kit, it took me probably an hour a headlight. This is just spray it on, wipe it off. I got that tip from years back. The Star Tribune had a car care column in it, and that's where I got that tip from. I had a 97 Camry that went 300 and some miles and was still running when somebody else had it.
Yeah.
And the headlights were good, still good.
Thanks for the tip, Vince. Did you have a question for Nick?
No questions.
Okay.
Perfect.
Let's go to the text line, Nick. We have a couple of those as well. Here is a texter asking, what can happen if you accidentally hook the battery cables to the wrong positive post?
that can be that can be a problem. It happens. You know, people put the cables on backwards, or an unfortunate event, you need to jumpstart the vehicle and you put them on backwards, sending the voltage the wrong way. There are fuses that hopefully will protect it. The fuse will pop and prevent from any damage happening further. So if you've done that, you know, obviously connect them up properly, see if the vehicle does start, if there's no warning lights, everything's functioning, you got lucky. I suspect, though, if you do it backwards, you're probably going to pop a fuse or two, which is supposed to happen. That's what, you don't want a computer going bad or something shorting out. You'd rather have a fuse blow, and then you can replace the fuse, and you'll be just fine. So on that note, if you are ever jump-starting or connecting the battery, make sure you know what you're doing. Look online, do a little bit of research. You don't want to have a costly repair from something that seems so simple and innocent but can be very costly and damaging.
How big of a deal is it if you do blow a fuse and have to get it replaced?
Well, a fuse is not a big deal. You know, a lot of times there's a maxi fuse, which is a large capacity fuse probably located near the battery, not very expensive and fairly easy to replace. But if that doesn't happen, something else gets shorted. It can be a computer. It could be something that could cost thousands of dollars. So make sure that the positive and the red, which is positive, and the black and the negative are clearly identified. Don't get them mixed up. If you don't know, don't do it. Just stop and ask for help, because you don't want to have a problem where you got to have your vehicle towed and have a costly repair.
Definitely. All right. Another texter has a 2014 Ford F-150. The security alarm goes off every time I unlock the door. There is a new battery in the key fob. They disconnected the negative cable for 10 minutes and it still happens. What do you think?
Well, I suspect that one of the sensors in one of the doors isn't working properly, so it doesn't see that there is locked or unlocked or open or closed, and that sequence gets mixed up. It gets mixed up, and the car says, I don't like what I see, so the alarm goes off. So that might be a situation where does the door ajar light come on? Is the dome light on? Is there any kind of clues that we have? Try opening and closing different doors, see what you notice. Maybe you can kind of narrow it down to which door it is. A lot of times we'd have to get like a wiring schematic. Sometimes you can access the body control computer, do a little investigating there too. So that's something you probably want to get looked at, because if the computer's not shutting down, that also could mean that the battery's wearing down when the car is just sitting there. So I would make sure it's not a draw or drain on that system. So I would do some homework, take some notes, probably get on somebody's schedule just to make sure you don't have a bigger problem that's behind the scenes there.
Good idea. It is 728 on CCO. We're taking your car care questions. We are joined by Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul. And you can reach us by text or phone. The number is the same, 651-461-9226. More after the break. CCO. And good morning. If you're just waking up on this 4th of July, we are taking your calls and your texts for Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul. Another texter on the line here, Nick. Twice in the last 2 weeks on our 2005 Buick LeSabre, when we were going to start the car, it made a backfire noise under the hood and a lot of blue smoke rolled out from under the hood, and there was no flame. When we restarted it, it ran fine, and there were no check engine lights. What could that have been?
That's a good question. Obviously, backfiring, I'm thinking maybe excessive fuel. If somehow the engine loaded up, we'll call it, like there may be fuel injector leaking or dripping into the cylinder. We'd have to probably, unfortunately, see it or experience it, which is always the best example. But I'd be cautious there. If that's something that's continuing to happen, you might have to take it into a shop, leave it with them for a day or two to have them experience that. That backfiring of its own maybe isn't the end of the world, but if you get enough of it happen, it can create damage that can be very costly. So that's something I would probably pay close attention to. If it continues to happen, get on somebody's schedule here in the near future to get that thing checked out and assessed to see what's going on.
If you have a question for Nick, give us a call or a text, 651-461-9226. We only have him for about 8 or 9 more minutes, so let's get you in the line. I have a question for you, Nick. This has to do with, as I was just kind of researching things a little bit, the difference in how a car performs in stop-and-go traffic compared to long highway driving. I've always heard that the gas mileage is better on a freeway situation rather than the stop and go all the time within the city. Is that true?
Yeah, I think there's a sweet spot depending on the vehicle at highway speed. I think when they design the vehicles and the transmission gearing ratios, they kind of take that into consideration where we can get the best fuel economy. And they're saying it's 60 miles an hour or whatever the average speed limit is. Try to get those RPMs at a spot where the engine's running very efficiently and very clean, because emissions are also part of that equation. So we want to have good fuel economy and good emissions. And I think they've learned that we can do our best at highway speeds. Around town or at the stoplight, they say that at a stoplight or at idle is the excessive amount of emissions that come from the tailpipe. So that's why a lot of the newest vehicles have that start-stop technology, meaning you come to a stoplight and the car shuts off,
yeah,
kind of like a golf cart, and then the light turns green and you depress the gas pedal, it starts up and goes again. Because we're really trying to cut back on those emissions, which, like I said, they're at their highest point while we're sitting at idle. So I think the technologies are doing a good job trying to keep the atmosphere clean, trying to reduce the amount of fuel that we're using, trying to make these cars more efficient and cleaner. So you are correct. At highway speeds, we get our best fuel economy. The start-stop technology helps with the emissions at the stoplight. And we'll see what comes around with the next evolution of technology to make things better.
Yeah, no kidding. Do you see a day where maybe we all might be driving hybrids?
Yeah, I think a hybrid, is a great combination. You know, electric vehicles have their niche also, so I don't want to be, bashing on electric vehicles. I just think with the hybrid, you can get a really long extended range on the tank of fuel. So, you don't have to worry about, can I get somewhere, need to charge it? It's good for the, if you can get a 600 or 700 mile fuel range on a tank of fuel, that's it's outstanding. And then you have the advantage of having the electric assist. So you can extend that, limit emissions. I think the hybrid vehicle is a big part of the future, especially in our climate in our area where we have, we head north for a 2-hour drive. If I don't, in my cabin, I wouldn't have a place to plug in and charge the electric vehicle. But with the hybrid, I can get here and back. I don't have to worry about stopping for fuel. So it's a good technology. I think it's a great path for our future and where we're headed.
Yeah, we purchased a Forester last year, and we had the option of going with the hybrid, and we didn't, because I think we're just still a little leery that the technology isn't quite there yet, or maybe a little unclear of how it worked. But it sounds like all of that's getting a little more simple.
Yeah, I think it's becoming more and more standardized. I there always will be options. Obviously, there'll be this traditional combustion gas engine. There's electric vehicles, obviously, and there's a combination, which the hybrid vehicle is. And I think as we go forward, I think the most common thing will be the hybrid vehicle.
Yeah.
It just helps with the fuel economy, helps with the emissions. It's an overall technology, I think, that'll keep improving and make our cars better.
Super. If you have a question for Nick, give us a call or a text, 651-461-9226. Here's a text question, Nick. How to get a purple shampoo stain out of a leather seat? I don't know if you're into the car upholstery questions, but there's one for you.
I don't know. There's a lot of detailing centers around town. Some of these full-service car washes might be a place to stop and ask. They might have a product. I'd just be very careful. I'd be very nervous about taking another product to put it on there to try to clean it and make it worse. So I'd caution you. Check. Ask a lot of questions. Check with the detailing center. They might have a product that can help absorb that out of there without making it worse. But be very, very slow on what you try and ask a lot of questions.
Okay, good. A lot of folks on the road this weekend, of course, with the 4th of July holiday. And I read that it's a good idea to, before you take a trip like this weekend, to update your emergency kit that you have in the car. I don't even think we have one these days, but those are still pretty important. What would you recommend be in an emergency kit for the summertime?
That's a good point. And I guess not. Like you said, most of us probably don't have it. I don't know if I even have one in the winter. I mean, that's not true. Under the backseat of my truck, I do have like a first aid kit.
Yeah.
I bought at the hardware store, and my truck's not that old. So the first aid kit's not that old either. The problem with those is that you buy one and 10 years later, everything in there's expired. So, a first aid kit, obviously the winter months, we like to have a blanket and, things that you might need, some water, if you get stranded, stuck, you're on the side of the highway or the road, what would you like to have with you? Those little extra battery charges that we can have for our cell phones, but same thing, you got to make sure it's charged. So I think before a road trip, it's a good idea to save a little space in your trunk for a few of those things and just pause and think, what might I need if I have trouble? And have a small duffel bag of a couple items that can kind of protect you if you do have an unfortunate situation where you're stuck, that you have a little comfort features to keep you safe until you can get help.
Super. Another caller on the line. We have Jerry in Maple Grove. Hi, Jerry. What's your question for Nick?
You talked a little bit about the hybrid, but now I understand the hybrids are plug-in hybrids. Kind of defeats the purpose of what's the difference between the two, and can you still get new hybrids without having to plug them in?
Yeah, so some of the features, like a plug-in hybrid, a lot of those actually just use a traditional outlet. So you don't have to retrofit your garage with a high-capacity charger. It plugs into your regular wall outlet. Now, when you plug it in, it sits overnight, it'll charge the battery, probably get you 6-8 miles. So it's not a big range. But if you're the type of person that you're just on a Sunday morning, you run into the supermarket, which is 2 miles away, you go there and back, you've only used that little bit of charge that you gave the vehicle. So it's just another way of getting us a little extra few miles for the situations that we don't need that long range. And I think also I was going to say on that earlier, I think the plug-in hybrid is kind of my favorite technology right now, because just for that case, you know, I live about 2 miles from work. And if I'm going to just go from home to work, I could go back and forth and just use, I would never need the combustion engine for that drive cycle. Then, you know, like for example, I'm up north this week and I'm going to 150 miles from home. I'm going to need something with a little larger capacity. So I think all these technologies based on the situation we're trying to accomplish are amazing. The plug-in hybrid's great for that short trips at home. Obviously, the gasoline engine helps us, you know, for the long distance. You add the hybrid feature to that, it gives you the extended range. So I think as these technologies emerge and get better, I think it's amazing what we can do. So I do like the plug-in hybrid very much also.
Great question, Jerry. Thank you. And we are wrapping up our time with Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul. Thank you so much for all of your calls and all of your texts this morning. Everybody's up early on the 4th of July. Nick, I love to see that.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah. Nick will be back with us next week in the 7 o'clock hour. So if you have any more questions that did not get answered today, please call or text us again next Saturday morning. Thank you very much, Nick. Have a great rest of the weekend.
You too. Have a good 4th of July.
Thank you. It is 7:43 on CCO. We're going to switch from cars to wine, and that's always a great conversation. Ted Farrell joins us next on CCO.